Welcome to the deep dive. You know, if there's one thing we all wrestle with, it's probably selfishness. It's part of the human condition, right?
Absolutely. For ourselves, and definitely when we see it in kids, that sort of me first attitude.
Yeah, that me first thing. And when that gets really ingrained, it can become full blown entitlement.
Which is exactly what we're diving into today. We're looking at lesson 10 from a new video course by Dr. Scott Taransky. It's called How a Heart-Based Approach Changes Everything.
Sounds interesting. A heart-based approach.
Yeah, it focuses on biblical parenting principles to really get at the root of this entitlement issue.
Okay, so our mission for this deep dive, let's figure out how entitlement actually develops, according to this source, and then pull out the specific strategies. I think there are five of them.
That's right. Five key strategies for moving kids, maybe even ourselves, away from that demanding mindset toward genuine gratitude.
All right, let's do it. So where does this all start? How does entitlement even begin in the heart?
Well, the source breaks it down really clearly. It all begins with desires, just things we want.
Yeah.
And desires themselves aren't bad.
Right. We all have desires. The source even mentions that biblical idea of delighting in the Lord, and he'll give you the desires of your heart. So desires are okay.
Exactly. But here's the first critical step. When those desires aren't managed properly, maybe they become rigid or we fixate on them.
Yeah.
They turn into expectations.
Ah, okay. So desire shifts into expectation. I expect this to happen.
Precisely. And then the final step in this progression is when those expectations become really strong, really inflexible, they turn into demands.
And that's entitlement, when expectations become demands.
That's the definition the source uses, yes.
Yeah.
Strong expectations leading to this emotional inflexibility. You know, the kid demands things go their way, and if they don't, meltdown.
Yeah.
Or frustration.
That desire expectation demand model is really helpful. It makes it easier to spot.
It does. And they use a visual too, like a spectrum. Entitlement is red, gratitude is green, and there's a neutral space in the middle. The goal is always moving towards the green.
Moving toward green. Got it. But wow, our culture today seems designed to push everyone straight into the red zone, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Think about instant gratification. It's everywhere.
Like ordering something online in the morning and it's on your doorstep that same afternoon.
Or, you know, microwave meals in 2 minutes flat. Kids grow up just assuming that immediate fulfillment is normal. It's the baseline.
So if that's the cultural tide, how much can parents really do? Are we fighting a losing battle trying to pull kids towards gratitude?
It's definitely swimming upstream.
Uh-huh.
Which is why the source stresses being really intentional about the training. It's not going to happen by accident.
Makes sense. What else in the culture feeds this?
Well, there's the whole excessive praise thing, the everybody gets a trophy culture.
Right. So kids start thinking they deserve praise or rewards just for showing up?
Pretty much. Or without putting in any real times. The source uses this funny spelling, exhort. E-X-O-R-T.
Exhort. With an X. Is that just a typo or?
I think it's intentional. Maybe a term they use.
Yeah.
The idea seems to be they feel entitled without having actually exerted themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They expect something for nothing, basically. No real effort involved.
Okay, so no exhort, no effort. And that lack of effort, or maybe lack of needing to put in effort, connects to something else.
It connects directly to contentment. If you don't have to work for things, or if you're always given things without limits, you never learn to be content with what you have. You never practice living within boundaries.
And you need contentment to handle limits, to handle hearing no.
Exactly. If you never hear no, or never have to wait, or never have to work for something, you don't develop that muscle of contentment.
Okay, so that's the groundwork. How entitlement develops, the cultural pressures. But let's talk about recognizing it. What does it actually look like day to day? What are the signs parents should be looking for?
Well, the most obvious sign is just constant dissatisfaction. Grumbling, complaining, always wanting something else, never happy with what they have.
Yet endless more feeling.
Yes. And often it comes with a generally angry or frustrated demeanor. Like the world owes them something and isn't delivering.
And it's not just about stuff, right? It affects how they handle situations, how they react.
Definitely. A huge sign is how they respond to correction. Do they take responsibility or do they immediately blame someone else?
Ah, the blame game.
Right. Blaming, rationalizing, justifying their actions, getting defensive. That's classic entitlement behavior. It often leads straight into a victim mentality. It's not my fault. You're being unfair.
And the source makes a really strong link between this entitlement and actual unhappiness.
It does, because if your default setting is expectation and demand, you're constantly being disappointed when reality doesn't match up.
Yep.
That constant frustration spills into resentment.
So counterintuitively, getting everything you demand doesn't lead to happiness.
Not at all. The source is clear. Entitled kids are often unhappy kids. Gratitude, on the other hand, actually correlates with happiness.
Which really raises the stakes for parents. We want our kids to be happy, so we need to address this.
And the source emphasizes that parents are like the architects of the home environment. But sometimes we accidentally build entitlement into the structure.
We fall into parent traps, as the source calls them.
Exactly. The first big one is rescuing. Always stepping in to save kids from consequences.
Oof. That's a hard one. Our instinct is to protect them.
It is. But think about the example they give. A teenager makes a mistake. Maybe the police are at the door. Our gut says shield them.
Right. Handle it for them.
But the source suggests that sometimes letting that teenager face the music, talk to the officer, experience the direct consequence. That's the better lesson for their character, even though it's incredibly hard for the parent.
Facing limits now to prevent bigger problems later. Okay, what's the next trap?
Overindulgence. And the definition here is key. It's not just giving kids lots of things.
It's giving them more than their character can handle.
Precisely. If a child doesn't have the maturity, the self-control, the gratitude to manage a certain privilege or amount of stuff, giving it to them actually harms them. It feeds the entitlement.
Like overloading a weak foundation.
Perfect analogy. And the third trap is related. Inconsistent limits.
So sometimes saying yes, sometimes no, maybe giving in after whining.
Yeah, or always trying to distract or offer choices instead of just saying a firm no.
Mm-hmm.
The source acknowledges those other strategies have their place, but kids must hear no sometimes.
Why is no so crucial?
Because no is what sends the child into what the source calls the workshop of their heart.
The workshop of the heart. Okay. What happens in this workshop?
That's where the real work happens. It's where they have to grapple with wanting something badly, but realizing they can't have it right now or maybe ever. It's where they practice contentment, patience, dealing with disappointment.
And if they never hear no, that workshop basically stays closed.
Exactly. The tools never get sharpened. The skills never develop.
Okay. This is making so much sense. We see the problem, the signs, the ways we might accidentally contribute. So now, the solutions, the five strategies to move from red to green.
Right. And these strategies are all aimed at building three key qualities that counteract entitlement: gratitude, generosity, and contentment.
Let's break them down. Strategy number one.
Teach the value of work and contribution. This is fundamental.
Meaning
you tie privileges directly to responsibility. Living in the house, having a bed, food, wifey, these are huge privileges. Kids can't just be consumers. They need to be contributors.
So chores, but not just chores for the sake of chores.
Right. Age-appropriate chores are essential because they teach the child identity. They learn, I am part of this team. I contribute. Even when school or sports are busy.
Yeah, that's always the pushback, isn't it? They're too busy.
And the source argues that contribution is part of their education, teaching responsibility. It leads to that first family identity statement.
Which is, we're a team. We work together. We all contribute. We look for ways to help. And we do more than what's expected. I like that.
It sets a clear expectation.
Huh?
Okay, strategy two moves from action to sort of internal rewiring. It's called engaging in gratitude therapy.
Therapy? Like practice sessions?
Exactly like practice sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Think physical therapy or speech therapy. You don't just talk about it. You do exercises repeatedly.
So what are the gratitude exercises?
Simple, concrete things. Like, if grandma sends a gift card, the rule is you call or FaceTime her right away to say thank you, and no delay.
Okay, making gratitude immediate and non-negotiable.
Another one is mealtime thankfulness, asking to be excused, clearing your own plate, and specifically thanking the person who made the meal. Every time.
Small habits, but they build that muscle.
And the source shared something fascinating here, the power of three.
Oh yeah, the study.
Right. A medical study found that just articulating three new things you're grateful for each day can have a bigger impact on mood than some medications.
Wow. That shows gratitude isn't just polite, it's psychologically powerful.
It really is. Which reinforces the second family identity statement.
Let me guess. In our family, gratitude is not optional.
You got it. We speak it, show it, and practice it every day. If we forget, we'll stop and go back until we get it right.
Love the stop and go back part. Okay, strategy three.
Encourage perspective taking. This is about shifting their focus off of me, me, me.
Getting them to think about others.
Yes. Through deliberate empathy conversations. Asking things like, hey, Dad had a rough day at work. How do you think he's feeling? Or what could you do to make his evening a bit better?
Or even hypotheticals.
Like, what do you think it would be like if we couldn't afford groceries this week? Not to scare them, but to help them recognize their blessings instead of focusing on what they lack.
Shifting from complaints to blessings. Opportunities instead of obstacles.
Exactly. Which leads to the third identity statement. In our family, we see the world differently. Blessings instead of complaints, opportunities instead of obstacles, and we focus on contentment.
Okay, number four builds on looking outward.
Strategy four is practice generosity, and the source defines generosity broadly. Giving energy, giving time or relationships, and giving money.
Okay, energy is like service, raking leaves for a neighbor.
Yep, or helping clean up a mess without being asked. Time is about relationships, money.
Hmm.
They had a really practical structure for money.
Ah, the six parts thing.
Yeah. Any money the child gets, allowance, gifts, whatever gets divided, six ways. Three parts for spending, one for church or tithing, one for missions or charity, and one for savings.
So right from the start, they learn to live on only a portion of what they get, and giving and saving are built in.
It's brilliant, really. Teaches financial limits and generosity simultaneously. And it includes modeling public generosity, too.
Like being the family that thanks the coach or helps clean up after the game.
Exactly. Building that servant identity. The family statement captures it. We look for ways to help and bless others. We share our money, time, our things, and our hearts because generosity makes us more like Jesus.
Okay. That brings us to the fifth and final strategy. This feels like it loops back to the beginning.
It does. Strategy five is train for disappointment and limits. It's about intentionally using that word no.
Sending them into the workshop of the heart again.
Right. But not just saying no and letting them flounder. It's about equipping them with a plan for handling disappointment.
Giving them the words to use.
Yes. A specific phrase they practice saying when things don't go their way. I'm disappointed, but I'll be okay.
I'm disappointed, but I'll be okay. That's actually really powerful. Simple, but powerful.
It acknowledges the feeling, but affirms resilience. And related to this is delaying gratification.
So even if the answer might eventually be yes, making them wait sometimes.
Yeah. That wait time forces them back into the workshop to practice patience, to deal with the desire not being met instantly. It directly counters that instant gratification culture.
So the final identity statement is about resilience too.
It is. We know we can't always get what we want, and that's okay. We develop patience to wait, thankful for what we have, and find joy in all things.
Wow. Okay, those five strategies, contribution, gratitude therapy, perspective, generosity, and training for limits, that's a comprehensive plan.
It really covers all the bases, working on both behavior and the underlying heart attitude.
So, pulling it all together for you listening, the big idea is that entitlement isn't fixed, and neither is gratitude. They both grow based on what's cultivated in the heart.
And parents are the primary cultivators, the architects. We have to be intentional about building that culture of gratitude using these strategies rather than accidentally letting entitlement take root.
The end goal isn't just well-behaved kids, but kids who are genuinely more content, more helpful, and ultimately happier people.
Exactly. And, you know, the most profound takeaway for me wasn't just about kids. It was that phrase from the last strategy.
I'm disappointed, but I'll be okay.
Yeah. The source mentioned an adult listener hearing that and having this light bulb moment, realizing he needed that script for his own life, for dealing with work setbacks, daily frustrations, all of it.
That really hits home. It makes you think, doesn't it? How often do we as adults face a disappointment, maybe stuck in traffic, a project not working out, an unexpected bill, and we react with frustration or complaint instead of that simple acceptance? So maybe the final thought for you is this. How could adopting that simple phrase, I'm disappointed, but I'll be okay, truly change your response to life's inevitable limits and letdowns? It's not just for kids, is it?